Welcome to The Stare Down, sports talk and real estate, with Sean Carpenter of Coldwell Banker in Columbus, Ohio, Bill Risser of Fidelity National Title in Tampa, Florida, and Todd Meininger of Cummins, Georgia. Listen in as they discuss the week in sports and toss in a pinch of real estate too. Now your hosts, Sean, Todd and Bill.
Hey, greetings, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Stare Down. It's our weekly sports talk and real estate show where we take a look at what's happened in the week before and a little peek into what's coming in the week ahead. I'm Sean Carpenter in Columbus, Ohio. My noisy host, Todd Meininger in Cumming, Georgia, is crawling on top of his computer for some reason.
Yeah.
And Bill Risser in St. Petersburg, Florida. Bill, let's start with you. What's going on?
I mean, I had a great week this week at work. We got a lot done. But I can't think of anything other than what happened today, Sean. It's all over Facebook, blowing up, you know, all over Phoenix with my great post. But I today, for the first time, after being in Florida for nearly 11 months, saw my first gator live on a golf course. And I mean real gator. Like, I think now I'm up to 18 feet. It was probably more like 8 feet, 8 or 9 feet. It was huge. And now I doubled the next two holes because I couldn't calm down. But it was really cool.
I didn't follow the saga. Did he stay there long enough, or did you kind of chase him off? Did you try and get close, and he eventually swam in the water? What happened?
So first of all, the way I happened upon him was purely happenstance. It wasn't one sitting up on the fairway next to a water hazard or whatever. Instead, we were looking for one of the foursomes balls, and I go around this corner of this stand of palm trees and palm fronds and stuff. And I'm walking along the edge of the driving range is a lake, floating golf balls. I'm walking along the edge, just kind of looking. And then I look up and about, I don't know, 10 yards ahead of me is a big alligator. And I like, whoa. And I turned around, ran back to the car, grabbed my phone, of course, because that's what we do today. Ran over, started taking pictures as I got closer. Then I said, I'm close enough, turned around, did the obligatory selfie with the gator, right? That was important. A bunch of those to get the right one. And then kept walking closer. Didn't turn the video camera on. I really should have. Next time I will. But just kept getting better and better, clear, really cool photos. And then he was facing away from me, and that's why I felt a little more confident. And there was a little bank, and he was down in the water, not up on the grass. So he was on the dirt. And so I just kept inching closer and closer. And then he'd had enough of me getting closer, and he bolted into the water. I mean, it was amazing how fast he moved into the water, which made me jump a little bit. Sure. I quickly backed off and then got a little video of him swimming away. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was great. And, you know, people are laughing at me there because they called me the alligator jinx. Every time I showed up, there was no gators. But now I've stripped that away, and I can't wait to see the next one. Cool. They are prehistoric looking. They
look as close to a dinosaur or other than a rhinoceros that you're probably going to see on Earth. And it's just kind of cool, you know, when you can see them up close and you can see them from a distance. I would not want to come upon one when I wasn't expecting to come upon one.
Right. No. And my wife yelled at me, you know, of course she said, yeah, I got way too close and I'm getting some of those comments, but I really felt confident that he was aimed the other way. He wasn't on my level I could be wrong. Some expert will call me and say, yeah, Bill, don't ever do that again. But
yeah, you will.
I'm thinking it was a crocodile, Bill. That would have been a bad move, but alligators, I don't think they're going to come after you. But
they're afraid of us, right? They want to get the hell away. So I'm hoping that continues. Yeah.
Well, that's fun to hear. Todd, how was your week?
Good, Sean. Really good. Busy work week, trying to get out in front of as many people as possible before the Thanksgiving lull, and really capitalized this weekend of just shutting down and just kind of relaxing and getting ready for the holiday week coming up. So good weekend.
Fantastic. Well, guys, we had a fun week of sports. We had yesterday was one of those days where I think all three of us were kind of chatting back and forth. Couple times we all kind of said, gotta love football. You know, it was just there was some good action. There was some great plays. There was some big wins. And I think the season is setting up for a really good finish next week's rivalry week. We got a lot of big games that mean a lot next week. And then the following week, we're going to have a lot of games that mean a lot. And we'll sort of have a better picture of what's going to happen. But as we talk about team sports, coming together as a team, we saw the end of a team run on Friday, and I'm not talking about a team that plays on the field. I'm talking about a team that actually just sits in a studio in Bristol, Connecticut. But for many sports fans who are either listening to this or have listened to any sports at some point in their career, they listen to two guys named Mike and Mike, Mike Greenberg and Mike Golic up in ESPN Radio. They ended their run of, Bill, I think you just said 18 years as partners. Is that right?
On ESPN Radio? Nearly 18 years. Mike Greenberg wants to go off and do different things. He's experimented stuff. He's hosted game shows. He's done the little things on television. He wants
a couple books.
Yeah, he wants to go do something else. Golic's completely content with his morning show, this top-rated morning show. So there was a little bit of a, you know, some adversarial things kind of said, but overall they've been family for a long time. You know, they've watched their kids grow up. I mean, Golic had children. Greeny had nobody when he started the show. This was this is March of 2000. So very cool setup. I mean, they were the first ones that did the television simulcast kind of a thing. I mean, they've done a lot of stuff in their 18 years. And so it's, Golic comes back a week from Monday. Greeny's a couple months out. He's got a new show he's going to be doing at ESPN. So they're still staying there, but not together anymore.
Interesting. So Todd, when you think of sports talk radio, think back to your days. Do you remember kind of who some of the first people you used to listen to down there in Florida and now in Atlanta?
Wow. Put me on the spot, Sean.
Remember the Fabulous Sports Babe?
Yeah. Nancy. Remember Steve Ferry used to call her Nancy, the only one? Nancy? Yeah. So I'm glad you guys brought this up. I listen to a lot of local stuff, so I'm just drawing a blank from 25 years ago who the local jock was. I apologize to them. But two things come to mind, Mike and Mike. One is I started my traveling career in sales back in, I want to say, 04. No, didn't have satellite dish. And I remember everywhere I'd drive, I'd go from Georgia to Mississippi, Tennessee, you'd lose the static, right? And then you'd spend the next 15 minutes just slowly turning or pressing forward just to find Mike and Mike. So when satellite radio came on and they were on, that was great. You could drive hours and not be interrupted. The second thing that I'll never forget is back when 9/11 happened. I was listening to them. And I remember Dickie V getting on there, and he's so emotional crying. But I'll never forget what Greenberg said. He goes, someday soon we'll be able to say back and better than ever, and that day is going to be tomorrow. We're not going to let this, not let this slow us down. That's their catchphrase, right? Back and better than ever.
Yep.
So those are two things that just jump in my mind when I think of Mike and Mike.
Yeah, you know, it's certainly cool to be obviously right there at the mothership and now with Fox Sports 1, but for the longest time, ESPN was the only game in town, right? And so they could go from a basketball segment with Jay Billis, and this time of year, then they could have, you know, Mike Wilbon on a story about the Bulls or something in the NBA. Then they might have Herb Street or Fowler. They get the best coaches, they get the best players, and now it's just a revolving door of some of these best analysts. And you know, who's the guy that used to play for the Steelers that was in the other day, Ryan?
Clark.
Ryan Clark. Just,
yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he's really good and just genuine, not afraid to call some people out, and was just talking about, you know, some things the other day. And it was Mike Greenberg and Booger McFarland and Ryan Clark were talking, and just some really cool conversations. And, you know, they've had their fun. You know, they're two different styles. You know, Golic's played the game. Greenberg hasn't. Golic's son is kind of up and coming in the ESPN radio as well. And
Junior, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'll be a part of the new show with Golic and Trey.
Trey Wingo. Yeah.
Trey Wingo. Yeah. Golic Jr. will be on the first hour because he runs like the overnight kind of leading into it. He's going to stick around for the first hour of this from 6 to 7. And then it'll be just Golic Sr. and Wingo for the next 3 hours.
And by the way, guys, I see both sides so clearly. I see Greeny saying, God, we've done this for 18 years, time for something new. Yeah. And I totally see Golic's side saying, if it's not broke, why are we fixing it? This is so much fun.
Sure.
And I get a lot out of it. So,
yeah.
Sure. And there's a couple other radio hosts that have been on long runs. Jim Rome, obviously, is a different style, but someone who's well respected. And Bill, I'm sure you, West Coaster, you know.
I remember Jim Rome doing weekends on Saturdays at the Mighty 690 in San Diego. He was just a local guy in San Diego trying to get started, you know.
Yeah.
And,
you know, really, really kind of made it big. One on ESPN2, he had a talk show, and he just pushed Jim Everett a little too far.
And then got pushed by Jim Everett.
And then got pushed. But and then Colin Coward came out of the radio business. Kirk Herbstreit, who is now, you know, probably the voice of college football now that Keith Jackson is gone. Yeah. Started as a radio host here in Columbus. I was actually a regular caller on his show. Nice. Gator Sean is what I was known as. But it was great when Kirk, you know, started at ESPN and would still do his local show here in Columbus as a former Buckeye captain and, you know, a Buckeye great, so to speak. But he would bring coaches from all over the country on. So he had Stoops and he had Spurrier. And so it was always nice to, you know, the rest of the day on our local channel was, you know, let's talk about the Buckeyes third string punter and a recruit from 6 years from now. But Kirk would come on and talk national and, you know, to see him where he's gone. He's always that voice, you know, when they bring him on and say, we're going to have Kirk Herbstreit after the break. You stick around because you want to hear what's going on across the country, right?
Right, right. So
as it came to an end, Bill, you hipped me and Todd, who were not listening to the last show, about a segment that you really were impacted by. And why don't you set it up and we're going to play a little clip from it, and then we'll talk about that, because sports is not just sports we see on the field. It's the people that are part of those sports, whether it's administrators, coaches, scouts, assistants, and fans. So why don't you set up the clip we're going to hear?
Yeah, so Bill Curry is a regular guest on Mike and Mike. Bill Curry was Golic's broadcast partner. They did college football for a long time in the early 2000s. Even after the radio show started, Golic would be heading out for the weekend. And Curry would call in a lot, and they would talk about the upcoming game. Bill Curry is 75 years old. He played center in the NFL. I love these things. He snapped the ball to Bart Starr and to Johnny Unitas. And for 20-somethings, get on Google and figure it out. his coaches were Vince Lombardi and Don Shula. I mean, these are incredible, incredible people. And I've heard lots of Bill Curry stories throughout the years. But, boy, I'll tell you what. The final show on the 17th on Friday, he was trending on Twitter like you wouldn't believe. It was unbelievable what he said. So I'm just going to stop and we're going to listen. It's kind of lengthy, but I think it's worth it. It's a couple of great stories about Lombardi, Shula, and then Bill Curry just really tying it up with the perfect bow for the Mike and Mike show. So here we go. We'll get this rolling.
Mike and Mike and the great Bill Curry and among the many reasons we wanted to have you today, not first and foremost is to say thank you for all that you brought to our show. But second is because you always have such enlightening wisdom that you can share, not just with us, but with our audience. And so I would start that part of the conversation by asking you, and you played for these two brilliant legendary coaches. Let's start with Lombardi. If there was one lesson you learned from Lombardi that you've taken with you through your life that you think would be meaningful to our audience today, what would it be?
Vince Lombardi's greatest attribute, in my opinion, this is my opinion, whether you look at it from the human standpoint or the spiritual standpoint, he was a deeply spiritual man, or if you look at it from a competitive advantage standpoint, his greatest asset is that he would not tolerate racism. We had more African-American players on the Green Bay Packers. Get the team pictures out and study them. Other teams had quotas. Well, they had no African-American players, and they bragged about it, and nobody could beat us. And I remember thinking, I wonder if these people are going to figure this out. So that was Coach Lombardi's greatest attribute, I think, beyond his intensity and his – obviously, he was a great teacher. He was a high school physics teacher. He sat me down my first day with the team. I had arrived late from the college All-Star game. He drew up the entire Packer offense on a yellow legal pad in about 2 hours. I still remember that lesson. That's what great teachers. So his second greatest attribute, I think, was his capacity to break things into simple components that even people like me could understand. I'm 75 years old, and I could draw those plays today. And I can't draw up systems from other processes that I was in. So Coach Lombardi had a lot going for him, but those are the things that stick out in my mind that are helpful for people. It would be very helpful for the leaders of our country to pay attention to some of those attributes.
Yeah, I definitely want to get into your thoughts of everything happening now. But then Don Shula, you played for. I played for Don toward the end of his career in 1993 with Miami. You obviously played for him more in the beginning of his career. So what were the big lessons and thoughts you took from him?
Well, Don Shula saved my career. Don Shula took a lot of guys. I was one of them. That nobody else wanted. You study those great teams they had with the Dolphins. A lot of those guys had arrived as free agents. Some of them are in the Hall of Fame now. but it's because Don Shula believed in us. And I had been put on the expansion list for New Orleans, which I thought was terrible. And Shula had called and asked me if I would be willing to play special teams for him in Baltimore. And I'll never forget what I said. I said, "Coach, I would walk to Baltimore to play for you." Well, he brought me in, allowed me to play on special teams. And wouldn't you know, the very first game, national television, we're playing the Falcons, and I clip a guy on an 80-yard punt return. Shula runs on the field, grabs me by the shoulder pads, and screams in my face what I deserved to hear. It wasn't nice. Mm-hmm. And being the idiot that I was at the time, I screamed right back with the same language, not proud of that. Well, in the films, Coach John Sandusky, a couple of days later, says, "Curry, is that a clip?" I said, "Well, it might be." I guess it is. He said, "Well, let me make a suggestion to you, Curry. Next time you decide to dog cuss the head coach on national television, you make very sure that it's not a clip. You understand?" Well, my Carolyn was flying in with our new baby girl a couple of days later, and I'm thinking, I'm going to have a one-game career. I'm going to be cut. Our child is arriving. I'm not going to have a job. I don't know what I'm going to do. So I went and found Shula, and this is the part that makes him great. He took me back in the equipment room, and I said, "Coach, I was completely out of line. I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have raised my voice to you. You did come across the white lines, and in the NFL, that's not a nice place. But I'm sorry that I used that language with you, and I shouldn't have been jumping in your face." You know what he said to me? He smiled. He said, "I kind of like that. Just clip the guy." Usually we played hard for him. If he ever decided he believed in a player, he would never give up on you. And the fact that he wouldn't give up on us, we didn't give up on him. So I love playing for him. He salvaged my career, and I really owe him everything in terms of my NFL.
Again, Bill Curry joining us, two-time Super Bowl champ. Certainly, that's a great title after a name, but so much more Bill Curry has been and is to this show as well. Bill, I'd like you to kind of marry yesteryear and today, because I follow you on Twitter, and I know you do a lot of speaking as well about things going on today, but also things from yesteryear. And I think one of the best ways to tie it in, because I remember reading this in your book, your definition of the huddle, of just what a huddle is on the football field and how that can relate really to everything outside of football.
Most everybody can remember where we were on September 11th, 2001. I remember where I was on September 13th, which was Thursday. We were driving to our assignments. You and I were driving to Birmingham, Alabama to do the Southern Miss Alabama game because ESPN would not put us on airplanes. And we were going to be told by cell phone during that trip whether or not the games would be played. So I stopped for gas in Atala, Alabama, in this nice service station attendant said, "Well, Coach, are we going to play the games this weekend?" I said, "Well, I don't know, but you may be the first fan in America to find out." Mm-hmm. Well, my phone rang, and we were told we weren't playing. So I go to the guy at the desk, and I said, "Well, we're not playing the games this weekend." Now, I'll never forget his response. His eyes bulged. His jugular stood out. He said, "Well, let me tell you something, Coach. In Atala, Alabama, Friday night, we're going to play football because it means a lot to us." I was stunned. And as I drove home, I thought, why does it mean a lot in Atala, Alabama, or College Park, Georgia, or Pueblo, Colorado? It means a lot in America because on Friday nights, the community huddles and people sit together that never sit together the rest of the week. And when somebody's son scores a touchdown, the most unlikely hugs occur. Those children that have been raised to hate each other by the sick folks in our culture get in the locker room, they get in the huddle, and they learn to love each other. And that love and respect, regardless of the color of one's skin, regardless of religion, regardless of national origin, it lasts the rest of your life. Football is the only sport in which every player needs every teammate on every play just to survive. Well, the United States of America is structured similarly, and we seem to have forgotten that fact. So football is a little more profound than a lot of people understand. And that's what people need to hear, I think, about our business.
Well, I can't think of a better way to leave it than that. You know, Bill, you have meant everything in the world to us over all these years. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate all the years. And I know they'll continue. We'll keep talking, I'm sure. But thank you for the time.
Well, you guys have had a great impact, and we love you.
Well, what do you think, boys?
Well, I first of all, as a speaker, Bill, and maybe it was because they were on a satellite, but I love the way Bill Curry doesn't answer. He pauses for a split second and he really makes sure he knows what he wants to say. I pick up so much on that. You know, sometimes I just get excited and enthusiastic to want to talk, but I love with his wisdom and his patience and his knowledge, how he just truly thinks about what he wants to say first.
Yeah. Just a real Southern gentleman, right? I mean, that's, you know, he just, I want to hear more people like him. I don't know what that means. I want to hear more people like Bill Curry.
Well, the thing I love about him and really any of the guys that have been around like he has is they're storytellers. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, I mean, Todd and you and I could sit in the corner of the room with a six pack of beer and be fine just listening to them tell stories about Atala, Alabama and Pueblo, Colorado, and, you know, these little towns that they've been through in their careers.
And you think about those little towns he's talking about in Friday Night Lights, the whole nine yards. That is, I mean, he might not be talking about downtown Phoenix, right? But he's talking about the majority of America, right? He's talking about every little town in every state that has this thing going on, you know, in the fall. It's pretty, pretty cool.
I love how he verbalized through his life experience what makes sports great, and that sports is a microcosm of life, right? And the only way certain people in towns get together is through sports on a Friday night. And the way you verbalize that, you just listen to it. And I think in the back of your mind, you already know this, but you don't hear it presented that way. And I certainly don't have the wherewithal to tell that story. So that was really good, Bill. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. So I go ahead.
Bill, as you were listening to that, you know, and as he was describing Don Shula, saying that Don Shula maybe didn't have the best players, but he gathered what he had and he made them the best. And if you think of a coach in today's game that does that, you have to think of Belichick. I mean, Belichick just takes the next, you know, Ty, you say it all the time, next man up. And he just finds that next person, slots him in, and figures out the best way to not just have that person stand and fill and put their, you know, finger in a hole, so to speak, and he finds a way to use that person. He runs plays for them. He puts them out in isolation, and it's so cool. And so the three things I wrote down when you were playing that, Lombardi, simplicity, right? Mm-hmm. Keeping it as simple as possible to be the best you can. Shula, believing in people, you know, believing that the people you have on the team are the right people, and the right people are the people you have, right? And
yeah.
And that's cool. And then the word huddle, you know, as he talked about that, think about the things that have happened in the last, gosh, you know, he talked about 9/11, but really since 9/11, but, you know, you saw New York City come together with a pride and a passion that brought the country together. You saw Boston strong after the bombing at the marathon. You saw Houston strong. You saw Vegas strong. And, you know, putting that word strong behind a city doesn't mean anything. It's the people around, you know, it's JJ Watt raising $47 million for the people of Houston. And that's a huddle. That's a huddle that,
yep,
you know, that he was talking about.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, and it goes beyond that, Sean. It's like you're in Bill's buddy Ryan Bocross. He's JJ Watt's popular and can raise money, but sports transcends to the regular guys, right? That are out there affecting everyday lives. And we can't do it on Sundays, but I'm sure you guys try to do it in your profession. I try to do it in mine. Just that's inspirational. That's good, man. I love that. I can listen to that all day. Bill Curry.
Yeah, it's you know, you one last point. You talk about the storytelling. You know, one of the great things I got to experience in my life was, you know, working for the Padres, hanging out with Jerry Coleman. So Jerry Coleman roomed with Whitey Ford, Mickey Mantle back in the 50s.
Wow.
And he would always once a year take me to lunch, you know, kind of from the ticket office, helping out with stuff. And I would bring a friend. He let me bring a friend. So Jeff Schmidt, Tom Shearer, all both had the opportunity to go sit with Jerry at lunch and just listen to his stories about, you can imagine the Yankees, you know, because he played with DiMaggio at DiMaggio's end of his career and was there when Mickey Mantle was taken off. I mean, so it's just unbelievable. You know, these guys, we have to embrace these guys maybe a little bit more than we do. Sometimes we kind of get wrapped up in the moment, but boy, there's some amazing stuff out there. We can find it.
Yeah, you know, it's that generational perspective that you just kind of hit on, Bill, maybe without even trying to hit on it. But, you know, as if we look back to kind of our heyday of youth, you know, and we talk about Magic and Bird and Jordan,
Yeah.
And I say that to my son. Oh, Michael Jordan, I've seen him on YouTube clips.
Right.
He, as he heads into his senior year of high school in the next couple of years, you know, he down the road will be talking about, well, I used to remember Steph and Lonzo Ball and
LeBron
who's the guy at the 76ers who's coming on strong this year.
Ben Simmons.
Simmons, and then
they have the Greek, Joel, the Greek Joel, freak,
Joel,
and
Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid playing well, right. And it's, you know, and we talk about Nicholas and you know, he talks about Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth, not even Tiger Woods. You know, that was a generation before him.
Yeah.
And so it's neat to kind of hear the Jerry Colemans, and now, you know, someone's going to hang out with a Jack Buck or Tony Romo.
What do you think about it? You know, I guess, you know, we're three middle-aged guys. Am I okay to say that to you?
Sure.
You guys, all right. but, you know, your heyday was the late 80s, early 90s, but you're still aware of kind of what happened in the 60s and the 50s a little bit, right? Things were different back then. Here I go. I sound like an old dude. But there's no reason, really, that those stories shouldn't be passed along, even to, you know, my son Kevin, right? Or, to Ryan. I mean, that's the kind of stuff they need to know, right?
Sure.
That's part of it.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, and you know, when they go back and they play Shinnecock Hills, and you know, we're going to talk about, you know, Corey Pavin winning there and you know, Retief Goosen and, you know, guys like that are going to say like, oh, I think I've read about those guys, you know, and I saw them in a clip, or, you know, it's just all generational, but it doesn't mean that, you know, that's what's neat about those courses being, you know, courses that Hagen won on and Jones won on. And, you know, it keeps that history of the game together, and it keeps that story that we always talk about, why we love sports, you know.
Right.
You just can't write what happens on the field into, you know, like Todd says all the time, if you told someone in Hollywood here's what's gonna happen, they would laugh at you. They say that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
You'd end up on the cutting room floor, right?
Yeah
if you told someone in Hollywood, no, look, the throw's gonna be so far up the line that Derek Jeter is somehow gonna know to be in place near the first base dugout, and he's going to turn and flip it back to the catcher, and the runner's going to be out at the plate. Now, I'm telling you, that's going to happen when the A's play the Yankees. I'm telling you. Think about it. That's one of a million things.
The moments that transcend sports, that bring sports and, you know, sports and politics, sports in the world, you know, when George Bush strode to the mound and threw out that first pitch in the World Series, you know, I mean, there's just, you know, that doesn't happen when the soldiers come back and run the game ball out to the kids, you know, and they, you know, those moments you can't not cry when you watch those clips, you know,
and
when you see the kid from Penn State who was paralyzed, who, you know, led the team on the field against Ohio State, you know, 2 years later,
I forget his name. Yeah.
Yeah. That's just, those are cool stories that, you know, make you love sports.
Yeah. So, I appreciate you guys letting me take that moment, because I think it was just cool to hear that. You know, I was a little bit emotional the first time I heard it. It's probably the 10th time I've heard that talk now. I just, and Sean, I think it's one you'll listen to a lot too, because the way he turns a phrase, right? Some pretty cool stuff for somebody who speaks. So,
well, and you know, you think about, you know, when I bring my stories of Marciano and Fred and like that, you know, those what I call blog worthy moments. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to be able to bring that emotion time and time that you tell it.
Yeah.
You know, and Bill Curry and that clip that you shared was well done. And thanks for sharing that. So,
sure.
All right, guys, let's talk some sports. We've had a good week. We're, as I said, we're heading into the kind of the first leg of the two winter sports, hockey and basketball. So why don't we just hit there? Hockey, not much change from last week. Lightning still continue to play some good hockey. And as do all the other teams we talked about last week. So let's push that aside until we get kind of to the winter, and you know, we'll maybe start really picking up hockey when we get to the Winter Classic and on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. But let's talk basketball. Been pretty impressed with the Cavs, or I mean the Celtics.
Yeah, wow,
15 in a row. Probably have a couple more wins looking at their schedule ahead of them. Once again, guys, I just remind you, game one. First 5 minutes, they lost a huge piece of their team in Gordon Hayward.
Right.
But Kyrie Irving has certainly not disappointed in what people expected would happen with him once he got out of LeBron's shadow, LeBron's sidekick, whatever you want to say. He is
really
making other people on that team better. And, you know, the word that that Curry used earlier, belief, the team, the city, the organization. Brad Stevens is really setting himself out as really one of the smarter, better coaches as far as putting his people in play.
And again, coming, 17 down to the Warriors? Mm-hmm. The fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Wow.
So. And we can segue that into, you know, you saw the Sixers, you know, once again, a young up-and-coming team with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, who's starting to play really good, and Markelle Fultz is coming back from injury in about 3 weeks. You know, they keep calling it the process, much like Nick Saban uses all the time. Hmm. But they were up, I think, 26 and really laying it on at halftime. And I think you guys might have seen the tweet I shared, but somebody in the Sixers social media team felt it was smart to, at halftime, kind of call out the Celtics saying, "You think you're good? Look at us laying the hurt down on the defending champs." And then Golden State goes Golden State and comes back and beats them by 8 to win that game. So anything stand out in the NBA so far? Any star players? Any, other than Lonzo Ball, I think just – going to be hard for him to kind of earn the benefit of the doubt from people because of his father and what's happening with his brother.
Well, I want to know, you know, last week we were talking about the Cavs, and I, Todd, I distinctly remember you saying the Cavs were going to be, you know, look out, they're going to be struggling. But all of a sudden they went 4 in a row. They're at 9-7 after being 5-7. So
don't sleep on them is another way to put it, right?
Exactly.
I think I compared them to Golden State, and I believe I said that I think Golden State's in better position, but geez, when you have LeBron on your team, it's kind of like the Cubs midway through the season last year. Their record wasn't great, but you knew they were gonna come on and be a factor at the end of the season. So,
right.
Yeah, I agree. I just can't believe how good Boston is. Toronto's 11-5, and they're 3.5 games.
I know, right?
Right. And Golden State's 12-4, and we're like, what's wrong with Golden State? You know, usually they're 15-1 at this point of the season. So you're kind of scratching your head.
Yeah, they have a big game against Oklahoma City, I believe, on Tuesday. Is that right?
Yeah,
you're right. I
think probably the TNT game of the week.
How many points is Houston putting up lately? Is that they're scoring a bunch of points from what I've seen the last couple sports centers?
Yeah.
Houston.
Well, that's D'Antoni, right? D'Antoni. I mean, he was doing that. The Suns forever when he had Nash and Stoudemire. Now he's got all that talent in Houston, and you got Harden leading the way. Go Devils! Yeah. That's going to be. I'm trying to find that game you're talking about. I don't see it.
I know they play this week because
Warriors Thunder on Wednesday night, ESPN at 8:00 Eastern.
Wednesday night. Okay, yeah. So that's
that'd be a good game to watch. Yeah,
big game there. Yep, for good. Sure. So. Yep. All right, let's hit college football, guys. We are 1 week away. We're actually entering now rivalry week. So Michigan hates Ohio State and Georgia hates Georgia Tech. And Iron Bowl is going to be one for the ages. Florida State is, I guess, a backdoor into a 5-6 bowl.
Sean, I think I texted you yesterday. Our bowl game is next week, right?
Yeah.
We're not making any bowl. This is our bowl. Right here.
Yeah, I saw someone on Twitter saying if Florida – because, you know, if there's not enough teams to make it, bowls can pick a team that's 5-6. Florida would have to beat Florida State to be 5-6. And someone was asking one of the Florida State – or one of the Florida journalists, you know, would – Florida accept a bowl bid at 5-6, and he didn't think they would. And the person's retort was, well, the fans deserve to see this team in a bowl game. And I'm like, the fans don't want to see this team in a bowl game.
The true fans don't. You're right.
Yeah. So let's start off the field. Todd, what is your – actually, let's go to Bill, our correspondent in the state of Florida. A lot of rumors swirling about the next Florida coach. Rumors of Chip Kelly – Tennessee's rumors of John Gruden. Did you see all that go down last night?
Well, part of that, this was great. I think part of that goes back to that Mike and Mike show. I don't know if you knew this happened, right? But Frank Caliendo comes on the show and does his Gruden impersonation. and said, and Gruden's voice says, "Yeah, I'm really looking really hard at Tennessee. I think Tennessee's got it to play for me, and I really like Tennessee." So now that they put it out as a joke, I think that actually spread some of the rumor a little further.
But I didn't know that.
Did you see the restaurant in Knoxville that kind of perpetuated the rumor?
No, what they did.
So there was a restaurant, I think it's called Calhoun's, and Peyton Manning was in town, I guess, yesterday, or before the game, and someone took a picture of Peyton's table, and the person who was had their back to the camera had kind of short blonde hair. So they said it was Gruden, right. And then the restaurant tweeted out that they're, Peyton is in town with Gruden. And so it went wild, and they're calling him groomers, hashtag groomers on the, instead of rumors, it's just rumors with a G.
That's awesome.
And so the restaurant has set out an apology saying, in their zealousness to, promote that he was in town. Turns out he's in Seattle for the game tomorrow night. And now with UCLA's firing of Jim Mora. On his birthday, by the way, today's his birthday, and he got relieved of his duties. A little more hype now that LA is maybe the better spot for a high-profile coach like a Chip Kelly or a John Gruden. Scott Frost in Central Florida has kind of come out and said he's had no conversations with any teams that the media likes to say he's had conversations with.
That helps recruiting.
Yeah.
But by the way, he didn't say his agent hasn't had conversations with him.
Right. Look at that.
Right? I agree.
We've heard that before.
Bill, what are you hearing?
He's not lying.
What are you hearing from down there as far as the coaching searches of one Florida, Tennessee, anything on the coaching front?
On the Florida side, it's all Chip Kelly down here. That's all anyone can talk about. That's who they want. Every columnist in the paper, it's all about how he would fit, how he would bring, that swagger back. It was all Chip Kelly. The other thing going on.
I think the rumors I saw was that what's holding it up is he has given them a list of assistant coaches that he wants, and they're having to vet those through the NCAA because they have to find out if they're allowed to, swing that.
Right. So that'll be interesting. The other thing real quick is, it's the game coming up this week that matters. Friday, you got South Florida UCF. Right? Mm. So undefeated UCF against one loss South Florida. It's that's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Is it in Tampa, Bill?
It is in. It's
Orlando.
Orlando. Yep. Central Florida is hosting. So.
Yeah, and that Quentin Flowers throws a nice spiral. I said that to you on the other day. He throws a really good spiral. Todd, you're not high on Chip Kelly. You're not against him, but you're just for something. What's in your gut telling you is the issue with Chip Kelly?
I'm just very. Let me clarify it. If Chip Kelly's next Florida coach, that's they could do a lot worse, right? It would be a good thing for Florida, but I'm just very lukewarm on his being the man. I think that there's a reason why he didn't really succeed in the pros. Like he did out in Oregon. And that's why I think UCLA might be a better fit. I think the West Coast style is a little better for Chip Kelly. I think the speed of the SEC and the speed of the NFL kind of neutralizes his offense. I could be totally wrong. But I think you joked that, Nick Saban didn't really do great in the NFL. But he left. I mean, the Dolphins weren't getting rid of him, right? He left because he wanted to go back to college. He wasn't happy in the pros. He just couldn't lie anymore.
He didn't make a playoff. Did he take him to the playoffs ever? Did the Dolphins ever go?
No, but they weren't ready. They weren't ready to fire him yet. I don't think.
Kelly, how many times did he go? The first 3 years, he was 10 wins and went to the playoffs.
You're right. You're right, Bill. But then it ended abruptly, if I remember correctly.
You're right.
I think he was in Philly doing well or San Francisco, one or the other. When he switched from one or the other, I don't know. Again, it's something that I can't really verbalize. I'm lukewarm about it. Next year, I could be flipping cartwheels saying I'm the biggest Chip Kelly fan there is. I think if I have to put gun to my head, I'd rather have someone like Scott Frost, a little more young, seems to be really hot. He's taken a UCF job and turned it around in a year. If he can recruit in Florida for UCF, he can recruit for Florida, I would think. So. Anyway, that's my take, Sean.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I think hopefully something happens this week. It might be a good little boost to lead into the Florida State week. Little excitement I would assume if they do something, they would announce it before the game so that he could, you know, be there for a, you know, applause or cheers, you know, give a little boost to the team.
Unless it's Scott Frost, then it won't be announced until
I agree
after that week, right?
And it probably shouldn't be with what's going on in his game and, you know, what he owes to those players.
Yeah,
I did see yesterday after the Gator game, Randy Shannon, a little bit of a interesting, you know, the game ball. He said, this is the best game ball I've ever had in my life. And, you know, he coached for many years at Miami. So have coached three games as the interim coach at Florida, and call that his greatest victory as a coach over UAB in a meaningless game was interesting. It said a lot about the relationship he has with his players, which even makes the game against Missouri even more baffling, that it just seemed like those players just gave up on him, just weren't even playing for the guy.
Well, two things come to mind, Sean. Is it for every coach your last victory the greatest victory you've ever had? I mean, it's
probably
it's such, being a coach and a player in those leagues have got to be so tough. But I saw, yes, it was UAB, but I was actually, for a team that's out of it, that's going nowhere, I was actually pleased with the performance. I think in his third game, these players are actually playing hard, which I think they kind of quit doing under Coach Mack. And I think they had a little bit of a hangover maybe the first 2 weeks. But, you know, that was exciting. And our kicker kicks 5 field goals, and you thought he, you know, won the Super Bowl after a couple of those. And I'm asking myself, I'm like, that coach has got him believing in something. A 4-6 team, right? Or a 3-6 team at the time had him playing hard. So hats off to him. I don't think there's a snowball's chance that he gets retained unless everyone says no. But I'm pleased with what he's done in the last 3 weeks anyway.
Yeah, I agree. So let's talk about the other games. Let's talk about the games that actually are going to impact the next couple weeks. Let's start in the early games. Todd, I think you mentioned it on Twitter. Don't sleep on a 14-0 lead. couple teams. Virginia jumps out to a 14-0 lead. Miami comes back, ties it. Then Virginia jumps out to another 14-point lead. And Miami comes back and I think drops, what, 30?
30.
30 unanswered.
Right.
They looked sluggish. They looked not as excited about a 12 o'clock start in Hard Rock Stadium as they were about the 8 o'clock start versus Notre Dame the week before. But they kind of did what they do. They got some turnovers, you know, and then also in the early game, you saw, Wisconsin, kind of slog through, against Michigan and then win by 14, little stat, Jim Harbaugh, 1-6 against top 10 programs.
Mm.
1-6 against top 10 programs. Urban Meyer has 8 losses total at Ohio State. Jim Harbaugh has lost 6 just against top 10 teams. I think the honeymoon and the sweetness of how good Jim Harbaugh is going to be for Michigan is
it's about to be 7 too, Sean. I have a feeling next week.
I think so too. Yeah.
And is Harbaugh and Sweet ever been mentioned that close together before? God, what a character. And I've never been I don't want to say never. I've recently become less and less of a fan. But yeah, Sean, you know, just totally sideways here, but do you follow James Bates on Twitter, the old Florida linebacker?
I don't think I do.
Yeah, he's a pretty good follow, actually. But he asked, he's like, the turnover chain, you know, what if you had a school, what would be your reward for a turnover? And I, of course, put their scholarship. That was my answer. But I thought it's gone a little crazy with the turnover, but hey, if they like it, that's fine. But anyway, I remember that when you're talking about Miami. And there was one other game that started out 14-0 that turned around. I was trying to remember where it was on those 12 o'clock games.
Was it the Ole Miss?
Mississippi State, Arkansas, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a couple. You're right. Yeah. There was a couple 14-0 games. It was probably Mississippi State, Arkansas.
Yeah. So anyway.
And Arkansas again, you know, they had a couple, they went for that fourth down and did the, you know, the Wildcat, which it seems like these days, anytime you're in the Wildcat or the Wild, insert the name of your program, the Wild Hog or the Wild, the Wild anything, right? The Wild Gator. Unless you throw from that setup ever, it's just stack 10 guys in the box and tackle the guy, because it's just like, it's always
90% of the time it's up the middle, right?
Yeah. It's just a run or a jet sweep. Bill, what games did you pay attention to yesterday on the college slate? The middle games was kind of some of the worst 3:30 games in a while. You know, once again, you had a slate of some of the big programs playing weaker opponents. There was a lot of weather in the Midwest, and there was a line of storms that went pretty much from Texas all the way up to Canada that really wreaked havoc with a lot of the games.
I had the most fun watching the Wisconsin-Michigan game, right? Because I think that it's intriguing to me that all the pundits still keep saying there is a chance, there's a way for an undefeated, if Wisconsin can, you know, win out, beat Ohio State at the championship game, an undefeated Pac or Big Ten champion could be left out of the playoffs. They're still saying that. Mm-hmm. And that'd be crazy, right? I can't even imagine that happening. And it seems like it's all playing out, but then then there's the ghost of Carpenter, the ghost of pumping the brakes Carpenter rattling in my head, you know, because it all lines up. Oh, sure, it'll be Alabama, Oklahoma, the winner of Miami, Clemson, and Wisconsin if they can win out.
Right.
But that's – what does the committee say to that? They just go, you know what, Wisconsin's – now they're going to have two we'll call them top 25 wins for sure, three if they beat Ohio State. But the teams they beat, they were only like just cup of coffee top 25s, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
They just happened to be up there for that week they played them.
And they're now others receiving votes, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, it'll be one of those things, Bill. I think here's how it will play out. If Wisconsin, assuming they get past Minnesota, which I think they will.
Minnesota.
Yeah.
If they find a way to beat Ohio State, which I don't think they would, but let's just say they do.
Okay.
And they get in. And then they get rolled like 41-0
by Alabama,
like
a lot of the Big Ten teams. Is there a 4 seed against a 1?
And then all of a sudden people say, like, I told you they didn't belong in, right? But I don't know how you keep them out. I don't know how you keep them out. And the discussion then would be, if Ohio State beats Wisconsin, you know, does Ohio State go in above a 2-loss South Bend or SC team?
Right.
And I think they would have to, beating Penn State when they were number 2 in the country, beating Wisconsin, they were number 4 in the country.
But their 2 losses are horrific. Does that matter at all? I mean, to get 55 dropped on you by Iowa, right? And then
who just lost to Purdue yesterday?
Right, which hurts Ohio State even more, right? I mean, that's and the Oklahoma loss. What was that? I mean, it was another
14. Yeah, 14.
They were
thoroughly beaten. What other games jumped out at you in college football? I do love the pageantry and just the USC UCLA game. The field, the way that both teams wear their home uniforms.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, the cheerleaders of USC and UCLA.
And UCLA.
Yeah. I mean, it was just, you know, that game was just a fun game to watch. Just the athleticism played on both sides. You know, the hype of the two quarterbacks.
I was just going to say, oh, by the way, two NFL quarterbacks playing, right?
Yeah. Although, you know, I don't disagree with, I forget who I saw it, maybe Barrett Salee, who's a ESPN guy, or he's a guy on Twitter. He says, as much hype as Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold get, he still thinks Lamar Jackson will make a better NFL quarterback. We'll see. Those guys are fun to watch. Just their presence, some of the throws that they had. Rosen had a couple of those, you know, dropped it out of the sky.
Yeah.
Into his receivers.
Well, they're the classic. They're the classic NFL quarterback, right? They're the Tom Brady version. Yeah,
Jackson,
the Deshaun Watson, and all those other things. The Cam Newton, all that kind of is the NFL quarterback moving to that sort of a model. And you're getting away from the 6'4" drop back guy who's got a cannon. We'll see. Got to be a little bit more mobile than that. I was sitting at a little joint. over near the water and watching a game, and I was it was the Michigan State game. I can't tell you, I can't even imagine what it's like to play in those conditions. Right.
The Tennessee LSU game was,
that was the one, right?
Unbelievable.
Right, where the wind's blowing like 40, the rain's coming down sideways.
Did you see that every time the referee would put the ball down, it would roll?
It would roll away. Yeah. Eventually, is there some amount of wind that'll stop the game?
I think if it's not
like golf where the ball's
lightning, if it's not lightning, I don't think that, you know, and the punts, I mean, the Tennessee guy, he missed, I think, 2 or 3 fumble punts. Yeah. I mean, he just won it. Just, he completely missed the ball. And that ball's got to be coming down, all over the place.
But I've shared that story about trying to field professional punts in the wind, Sean. We don't want to talk about that anymore. It's a lot of work.
Hey, Sean, what about K-State beating Okie State? That was a pretty big
Oklahoma State almost came back at the end there. Let's talk about sportsmanship. Let's talk.
Where are you going with this one?
I'm so confused.
Talk about the Heisman favorite, Baker Mayfield.
By the way, now he's Phillip Rivers in my book. Because that's Phillip Rivers all day.
Yeah,
he throws a lot of late interceptions, almost winning the game. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm okay with that.
For the people that didn't see it, he's the latest poster child for the classless play. For the Oklahoma fans, he's the playing with passion. He's Brett Favre. He brings his A game. But if you didn't see the beginning of the game. They flip the coin, and Baker Mayfield is one of the captains, goes across the 50-yard line to shake the Kansas players' hands, and they just left their hands on their sides. They refused to shake his hand.
Obviously rehearsed and scripted. They're not going to do it.
Yeah.
It happens every day.
They're going to play into his passion and into his – and they were cheap-shotting him the whole game. It looked like a lot of the clips you saw, they were hitting him late. They were staying on top of him on hits. They were tackling him after the whistle. And I just think he had had enough of it. Coming off the field, he gave a gesture. We can say it on this podcast. He kind of grabbed his crotch and kind of called out a guy and sort of, gave the gave a very, what people would say was a inconsiderate and vulgar gesture.
Yeah.
He then apologized for it afterwards, which people are saying, is rehearsed and scripted. His coach was unhappy with it. But his coach did point out that, he suffered – a few late hits. What was your guys' thoughts? Do you care? Is this going to stop him from winning the Heisman? I think he's clearly the favorite and probably should deserve to win it for his stats and the way he's led his team and the wins he's had, especially with Saquon Barkley kind of falling off in the last month, both team and stats-wise.
I think it'd be great if he could turn the other cheek and have that composure that, some players do have, right, who can suffer that sort of a game where people are being a little aggressive or where they've been slighted, whatever they want to consider. And it's very impressive. I think like a Marcus Mariota, right? There's no way he would ever let anyone know that something was up. He's just going to turn, move away, move on. It's how he was raised, and that's the way it works. That's one look at it. But the other look at it is I dig it when players show passion.
Right. He
just went a little too far. There's nothing about it. He could have been jumping and yelling and screaming and pointing at the other sideline. Go for it. But then you turn it into that, it's going to take another place. What do you think, Todd?
Well, first of all, he's a kid, right? I think, Bill, you said we're all middle-aged. He's a kid.
Yeah.
A teachable moment. He took the bait, right?
Yeah.
Now the question I have is, why was Kansas baiting him? Why are you poking a sleeping bear, right?
Yeah, you're 1-8 or 1-9.
You're 1-8. The big joke, I think, I don't know if it's Herb Street. Someone always says, you're always guaranteed that one win because you have to play Kansas when you're in their division, right? So I just, for the life of me, I'm like, why are they poking and prodding and getting him? I mean, that game has being sluggish and starting out slow written all over it if you're Oklahoma, right? Yeah. But fire up the Heisman guy. He's ready to go. One thing I do disagree with you, Sean, I don't necessarily think it was a scripted apology. I thought it was actually sort of on the heartfelt side, but I will agree it took a coach to make him aware that, hey, you got caught up in the moment. I think I agree with Bill. You like passion, but he obviously went a little too far.
I think it was I'll say this. It was apology fitting with the times.
Mm-hmm.
We see it a lot in the politics world right now or in the sexual harassment world. People get caught and they apologize all of a sudden. A picture comes out from 7 years ago on a plane and all of a sudden there is a scripted apology. And there is apologies after people get out of, and now we're getting, tweets about apologies aren't good enough, I don't know what else he could do, right? If he doesn't apologize, he's a villain. If he does apologize, I'm just saying it's who he is. I agree with you. It's a teaching moment. He'll be better. I think this whole worry about, is this going to hurt his draft stock? once again, let's pump the brakes. You know, he's not smoking weed. It's not like any NFL player has never done a throat slash or a crotch grab. You know, some of the best in the game.
He's not stuffing crab legs down his pants.
Exactly. I mean, he's not, there's nothing illegal about this. And it's funny, some of the media sources were ripping him for his gestures, but there was a guy in the Louisville game that did an even, I think, more obscene gesture, and it was getting retweeted and shared as one of the funniest things people had seen all weekend.
Mm.
I don't know if you saw it. It was quite much more childish and immature, you know, by any standards. But you know,
he wasn't like pretending to be a dog and peeing on the fans. Oh, wait, that was Odell. I'm sorry.
That was Odell Beckham.
So
confused. Yeah.
There's so much going on.
Was it Randy Moss that jumped up and was doing something on?
Yeah, he humped the
the goalpost. Yeah.
Hey, Bill and Sean, you all three of us are lucky enough to be parents, and we have nephews and nieces. And I think what you're referring to, Sean, and I'm so glad this phrase came out of sorry, not sorry in the last couple of years. I mean, do you remember like trying to discipline your kid and they're like, sorry. And you're like, no, you're not. You're just saying that you're getting out of trouble. So
that's, you know, Todd, that's perfect. That the people who say, if anyone I offended, I apologize to. What is
that's
that?
A sorry, not sorry, right?
Yeah, what the hell is that? What do you mean? Either you're sorry. Yeah, not sorry. You're right.
If you took it as an offense, then, you know, hey, I'm sorry.
Like, right. The rest of you who thought it was cool, right on, dude. Awesome.
Okay. Yeah, I thought he was going back to the Oklahoma game. I thought he was sorry, but yeah, I definitely took a coach to point it out to him to stay contained. Right.
Yeah.
It's Kansas.
I do think it's kind of interesting in the Big 12 how they do their championship game. All the teams play each other, and then the top two teams play in the championship game.
That is neat.
You know, so it's going to be probably TCU versus
Oklahoma,
or if TCU loses this week to, I forget who they play, someone that they should beat. It'll be Iowa State, I believe.
Baylor, they play Baylor.
Yeah, they play Baylor, and so they'll probably beat Baylor. But interesting that they basically play and then play again. You know, and certainly it's possible that Ohio State could have played Wisconsin this year. They just didn't happen to, as you know, with the two sides of the conference. But looking ahead this week, Todd, what game is going to be on your radar? Is it the Iron Bowl? Is it the Ohio State Michigan? Is it any other game that really jumps out at you? Is it, you know, because the ACC game won't matter. Miami goes to Pitt, which is an interesting game. You know, the boys from Miami going up to Pitt, could be cold, could be snowy, could be rainy. All the pressure's on them to make it. I think Clemson, South Carolina is an interesting game. Gamecocks are, I believe, 8-3 playing at home. I think they're clearly an underdog, but playing with some swagger. Clemson, who knows what? Iron Bowl, I think, is the game of the week, right?
Are you going to leave me any choices, Sean?
You didn't pick mine yet. I'm good.
So, briefly, yes, you hit all the good ones, right? Iron Bowl's got to be up there, number one. Ohio State, Michigan's always a fun noon game, I believe. So, being from Florida, obviously, I got my eye on Florida State. Being living in Georgia Tech's kind of an underrated little rivalry.
Georgia comes to Atlanta 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah. That's true. One that I love that's actually playing Thanksgiving night is the Egg Bowl. For whatever reason, I love Mississippi State. So that's going to be a fun one. It's a bittersweet week, Sean. It's the last week of the season. A lot of great rivalries. But that said, the last week of the season is really only halfway through the season. We got bowl season coming up behind it, which is 6 weeks of just football debauchery, right? I mean,
yes.
Just almost every night a bowl game is on with 35 bowls. So.
See if Risser can keep his title in our stare down bowl.
We call it the highlight title, right?
I might retire undefeted. I'll let you know. I'll let you know later. For me, it's going to be, come on, it's Sun Devils and the Wildcats, Arizona State.
How can we forget?
7-4 U of A against 6-5 ASU. Both are going to bowls. You know,
is there a name for the game, Bill, or no?
No, it's Duel in the Desert, but it's okay. The Territorial Cup has, you know, been around for since it was late early 1900s, right? It was the the Tempe Normal School is what ASU used to be called. It was a teacher's college. So it's, that'll be a fun game. We've got, I can't remember the name of the quarterback for Arizona, Kareem something. He's amazing.
You know, Kareem Jackson.
Yeah. He's run for what, 600 yards or 700 yards this season, as well as decent arm. But you know, it's at Sun Devil Stadium. So that's always a whole lot of fun because there are a ton of U of A alumni who live in Phoenix, right? Most people go to Tucson, get their degree and leave. It's not, there's not much going on there. And I'm saying that out loud right here on the podcast. So just hit me up, Kent Simpson, Emmy Simpson, and all the rest of you.
Gauntlet.
It is a fun week because obviously starting with games on Thursday, mostly NFL. And then we have, like you said, the Egg Bowl, Todd. Friday, you know, you have a resurgent Missouri team who's just scoring a lot of points. They're gonna beat down Arkansas.
They should, yeah.
And I believe Texas plays somebody or A&M. I forget. A&M maybe plays LSU that week. And then Saturday, you know, like you said, Ohio State game goes right into the Florida State game. Is what time, Todd? Have they released
noon? High noon.
Okay, so Florida.
So is Georgia Tech.
Okay, so you got three games in that window early, and then you got the 3:30 all eyes on the Iron Bowl. Notre Dame plays Stanford, and then the late games, as Bill talked about, South Carolina. We'll be watching that with Riley home.
Nice.
And there's probably a couple other good rivalry games that week. So we'll see. A lot to talk about next week. Will be a good recap, and then we'll start being able to prognosticate who's going to match up, not just in the CFP games, but in the other bowl games. Because a lot of the games will start to be slotted. We'll have our first game in less than 3 weeks. I believe December 16th is the first bowl game. So less than a month away from our first bowl game. So in 3 weeks on the Stare Down, we'll be doing our picks. So guys, it's been a long show with the extra Mike and Mike recap. Let's go through the NFL quickly. Thursday, Steelers really starting to separate. I mean, they are obviously in the playoffs. They're going to be the NFC North or AFC North.
They're tied with the Patriots. So they're
remember when Jacksonville handled them in week 3 or 4, and that was it. Ben should retire. He's so bad, right?
Yeah. And so 3 weeks from now, Patriots play at Heinz Field.
I'll take the Patriots.
So will I. They looked unbelievable today against in Mexico.
Mexico, State. Yeah.
What game, Bill? Let's start with you. What game jumped out to you as either a good game or just a good performance by somebody on the field?
It's got to be the Saints and the Redskins, right?
Oh my gosh!
Are you kidding me? So, you know, the Saints have won 7 in a row coming into this game. Redskins are tough. Kirk Cousins is great. And for them to be up, but they were down 18 in the second half. And they come back and tie it on an amazing 4-play drive with about a minute left, you know, to get the tying score and send it to overtime, and they win with a field goal there. So
they were down 14 with 2:55 left. They're down 14.
Right. Two scores. Unbelievable. Yeah. So yeah, how about them Saints? 8-2 as well. So
and eight in a row.
0-2 to 8 in a row. So and the other game that, you know, I don't want to take it away from you, Todd, but Rams and Vikings, that's, you know, Minnesota, Case Keenum's the dude, right? I mean, he watched him in the post game. He goes, I know he asked me this every week, but I think we just got to keep doing what we're doing. Why would we make a change? I mean, they're making him defend himself for, you know, playing well and still being named the starter. You know?
Well, and they're still talking about bringing Bridgewater in, which is just the silliest thing I've ever heard.
I mean, it's the silliest having Peterman start for Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo. Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh,
Todd, your team plays tomorrow night. Kind of a must win. Right? I mean, are they calling it a must win yet?
They're 5-4, right? Isn't every game in the NFL a must win? I mean, it's.
I thought that was college.
Well, that's true. There's a little more flexibility in the NFL, but it's week 10. There's, you know, six weeks to go after. Yeah, it's a big game for sure.
Here's an interesting stat. Last year, after 10 games, the Falcons were 6-4. They went on to the Super Bowl. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. I've read similar things. Two games stood out for me. Baltimore shuts out Green Bay. What happened to Green Bay?
Brent Hundley.
Wow. Yeah. Well,
Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers is that good, right?
I mean, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Yes. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. They haven't been shut out at home in years.
Yeah.
The other one is just when you think they can't get any worse and there's dissension in the locker room and their coach looks like he should be arrested. The Giants beat Kansas City 12-9.
Yeah.
What? I mean, he just looks like he's on a wanted poster. I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm sure he's fine. But I get every time I'm like, wow, this guy. And I apologize to him and his family. It's a joke. But that said, Kansas City started out what? But Bill, 5-0?
Yeah.
And they are.
They won one of their last.
They lost, 5-0, and they lost.
Woo.
They've won one of their last six. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Here's talking about going back, way back in time. The Lions accomplished something that the last time the Lions did this as a team was the year I was born, 1961.
Wow.
They won at Minnesota, at Chicago, and
at Green Bay.
All three in the same season.
Wow. And so, did you see
the. And they're six and four.
They're playing great.
Yeah.
The bright spot for the Browns, the winless Browns, they had a no penalty game today, Bill, for the first time since 1962.
Oof. No, wow, does that pick up a win for them somehow?
Do they get it means absolutely nothing.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Good.
And Bill was toddling in diapers last time that happened. So
yes.
So, maybe I was already housebroken. I don't know.
So we'll see what happens next tomorrow night, Todd, with your Falcons. Big moment. You know, with the secondary of Seattle being severely depleted, it'll be a game that if they don't get this one, they will probably look back, you know, with Carolina playing well and with New Orleans, really, frankly, what would be three games up.
They were 0-2, and they won 7 or 8 in a row.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever happened, or it's been forever.
Well, a team has won 8 in a row because, obviously, the Patriots.
Not starting off 0-2, though, right?
Right, but starting off 0-2, the last time it happened was when the Saints won the Super Bowl, and it was the Saints that did it.
Wow.
Yeah, Saints started 0-2 in that year, won 8 in a row. In the middle of the season, not the next eight, but won 8 in a row in the middle of the season and went on to win the Super Bowl over the Colts.
So, wow.
Wow. Yeah.
So I saw that today on Twitter. So guys, good show. Love talking about sports. Love getting together. Let's quickly recap, Todd. What do you got coming up? It's a short week. Any activity? Or are you pretty much working from the home office this week?
No. Yes, I am working from the home office, but there's still a lot of activity. Monday, Tuesday, I have some great opportunities I would love to shut down, but not shut down. I'd love to close. But realistically, it's a holiday week. So I'm going to work hard the first half of the week, and then I'm going to enjoy the long holiday weekend down in Florida, Bill. I'll be just south of Apalachicola, the Forgotten Coast.
Right.
Is it forgotten after you've been there, or are you on your way?
No, I love it. I think it's a part of Florida that doesn't get a lot of hype or publicity, and I think they kind of like it that way. So,
Todd, I think of a lyric from one of our favorite Buffett songs: "Across from the bar is a pile of beer cans. Been there 27 years. Imagine all the heartache and tears found in 27 years of beers."
Ringling, right?
Yes, you got it. Early Jimmy Buffett.
Bill, look that one up. It's a good one.
I will.
Bill, what do you got coming up this week? Short week for you as well.
Yeah, short week. I have nothing actually on the calendar. My sales team has nothing scheduled because you know that, Sean, a lot of realtors are doing other things.
Sure.
So it's a whole lot of prep. I've got working on some business planning stuff for our sales team that I'm helping our sales manager with. I've got to a great interview coming up. I do have a podcast interview Wednesday for next week. I've got a skit scheduled. And this week on the show, on the Real Estate Sessions, it's Heather Sittig Jackson, the CEO of Relola, which is a new tool that NAR, they announced it at NAR that it's free for 2018.
Yep. I met her at NAR. She's good friends with Molly McKinley.
She is, and that's how I was connected because Molly and Lauren, both of AdWorks, are now at Relola. And amazing woman, really cool tool, really allowing you to share your insights no matter where you are. So think about Foursquare, but specifically for a realtor. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So it's highest MLS. So if you show a listing, you can actually then go into your Relola app, open up that listing, and leave your insights and your take on that property. And then have that automatically feed to your site, feed to Facebook, put it on your, you know, your website, whatever you want to do with it. Really a really cool tool. And so I'm excited to chat with her. Did you get a chance to listen to Adam Rude?
I did. I thought he was really sharp.
Yeah. Nice kid from the Chicago area. Huge soccer guy, Todd. Yeah, that was
actually played for the played in the MLS in the Chicago Fire organization.
Yep, in the organization there, and won an ASL title, I think. Really cool guy.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, guys, for me, it's a home week. I'm picking up my daughter on Tuesday at the airport, and she flies home for a 5-day visit. So it's kind of one of those quiet weeks where it'll be a lot of managing that CRM. You know, going through the database, trying to make sure you touch a lot of people, even if it's just a soft touch to, you know, set up the next 5 weeks. Already starting to book quite a few events in the first quarter of 2018. And Bill, we got a tease last week that hopefully turns into something out in the Phoenix or out in the Arizona area. I'm not sure where the convention's held.
It's going to be out on the west side in Glendale.
West side?
Used to be up in Prescott, but now it's they moved it back into the Phoenix area proper. So. That's good.
If that comes to fruition, that'll be a great time.
Yeah. Hey, so I promised myself I would bring this up. Congratulations, Martin Truex, for winning his first NASCAR championship today down at Homestead, Miami. The Furniture Row number 78 car, you know, won the actual race, which is great. He also won the championship. We got to talk NASCAR for at least 1 minute a year.
Okay.
Wow. Look at you.
And we'll talk it again in the spring because Danica Patrick announced that she will be retiring. She's going to run one more Indy 500 and one more Daytona 500.
And Dale Jr. Had his last race today, right? So his retirement officially started. He really interesting beginning of the race. I watched the beginning and a bunch of the race, but to see Dale kind of side five as he's driving down pit row, every single pit crew member for every single team. That's 43 teams. He's driving down this. The cars are, you know, out in the with the pace car, and he's taking his time having this one last pass down pit row. So very cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. Sean, one more thing. It's been a long show, but Bill started it. So,
I know.
real quick, EPL's back, but that's not what I want to talk about. I read that USA, Italy, Chile,
NIT.
the World Cup NIT. If they can get money to sponsorship, I'd love it. I think that'd be awesome. So, anyway, there you go. Enjoyed it, boys.
Yeah, they talked about that. So, hey, on behalf of Todd and Bill, happy Thanksgiving to all of our Stare Down listeners. Connect with us. We're always on Twitter at Todd Meininger, at Bill Register, and I'm at Sean Karp. Or you can always tag the show at Stare Down Cast, and we'll look forward to catching up with you guys.